studied classical singing, but nowadays I sing lots of contemporary and experimental music. However, I actually like singing both, and I also like combining both styles in a program. If you would like to know more about me, please look at my website www.irenekyorka.de, and I invite you to subscribe to my monthly newsletter. That would be so wonderful to be connected with you also on that way, and you will know everything I'm doing, because I'm doing a lot, yes. In this podcast, I talk about themes all around contemporary music. I share with you the behind the scenes, the insider knowledge, and what is most important to me. I bring you the human beings out of this world closer. I'm cooperating with the NMZ, Neue Musikzeitung, and in today's episode, I'm talking to Christine Tjørgensen. She is a composer from Norway, and she's having a premiere with the WDR Symphony Orchestra in Cologne on the 29th of May. And she's written a new piece for this orchestra, and it has the name Wolpertinger. So let's dive into this talk that we find out how Christina is composing, how she got into composing, and everything about this piece, Wolpertinger, for 29th of May in Cologne. Hello and good morning, Christine Tjørgensen, and I'm so excited to talk to you today in my podcast, Neue Musikleben.
Yes, so nice to be here.
And I'm always thankful for this connection that we have nowadays, because you're in Norway and I'm in Germany, and we can still talk about great things and eventually also about the premiere you're doing with the WDR Symphony Orchestra. But first, I would like to know from you, how did you find your way into new experimental music?
Yeah, because I grew up where I am now, actually at the south coast of Norway, and it's a really tiny place. It's not a village, it's just a place by the ocean. And I listened a lot to the radio when I was a kid, and it was this experimental radio program that I really loved, and I recorded on cassette player, and listened to it all the time. But I didn't think about that this was experimental music or anything. I just loved music, and I also started to play clarinet in the school band here when I was 7 or 8, and I played a lot of clarinet. And I don't know, I think it was just a huge love for music, and when you have that, you just want to know more and dig deeper into it. So it was very natural when I started to play clarinet. It was first a classical, and then when I was at high school, I listened to, you know, Stravinsky, Bartok, Gesualdo, all these things. And then you start to listen to the 20th century music. So it was very natural to dig into it. And first time I took clarinet lessons in Oslo, my teacher was actually in the Cicada ensemble, Rolf Bork, and he taught me how to play multiphonics on clarinet, and that was when I decided that I wanted to be a clarinet player. So that was then I was okay, no way back, I just want to play contemporary music. And I thought, actually, because I was really naive and from this tiny place, I thought that everybody played contemporary music at the academy and not classical. This is really strange. So I was so shocked when I started there. I was listening to experimental pop and rock and just wanted to play contemporary music on my clarinet. And then it was like Brahms, Beethoven, Mozart, and all these things. I was not allowed to play contemporary music. They always say, I have to wait. But then, yeah, I played it anyways. So yeah, that was my way into it. I just loved it. It was just my passion immediately. I don't know, I didn't have to find a way. It just happened naturally.
It's always great when it just happens. And so when you had to play all this classical repertory, now looking back, would you also think it helped you in some way, or kind of, I don't know, made the picture whole? Or
of course, I really love the classical music. It's a huge part of me. And I also think, like, when I compose for orchestra, it's there because I also played so much orchestra music and been working in orchestra for many years. So I really love it. It's but I think it's important to play both, and it's
yeah, I also like both, but for me the way was the other way around. I started I studied classical singing, and at first I didn't know that I would end up in this contemporary field, but I feel it gave me a very solid technique that I can do anything that I want. But
of course.
Also coming from the other way must be also very exciting to just add the classical playing techniques to the modifonics.
I always play the classical techniques, and I love practicing these basic techniques. It's so, I always loved it. It's, I love practicing, and especially the most like basic stuff. It's really zen, like you get into this really state of mind, and I love that things are, you can really practice the small details. I always love that.
And how did you then get to the composing part from playing the clarinet?
Oh, that's very strange, because I feel that I worked so hard to become a clarinet player. It was like really blood, sweat and tears, and I practiced so many hours every day and never thought I was good enough in a way. But with the composing, it was just, it was, yeah, maybe at the end of my master's at clarinet studies, or when I finished, I was like, I started to make some music, but I didn't thought it was making music, because I played in some contemporary music groups, and I made some for my groups, and then they asked for more and then suddenly other people asked for a piece, and I just started to make pieces. It was actually quite easy. I don't know. It was freedom. For me, it was freedom to compose, because clarinet, I felt, was really influenced by teachers and everybody that I wanted to please everybody. And also when you play in orchestra, you have to fit in, and I really wanted to fit in everywhere. But with the composing, I feel like I could be me, I could be free, and I could make the music I had inside of me. And it was not so easy on my clarinet, because it was so influenced by all the teachers in a way. So, and also Karola Baukot plays a big role here, because I played a lot of her music, and I remember we played with Asa Misimasa, her Clarinetten Trio, and I was a huge fan of her music, and we played for her a rehearsal. And after this rehearsal, she asked me, like, Christine, do you compose? And I was like, how did you know that? I didn't call myself a composer or anything. And she asked me if we can go for a dinner, and she asked me to bring my music. And then she looked at my scores and just invited me to study with her in Linz to study masters. And I was so shocked. Are you kidding?
That's so amazing that you got discovered, or people, I mean, you said it was easy, but that there was the support immediately, and
people could see it
in you, your talent.
Yeah, I don't know. But then I started to take myself seriously, and I started to study there. So I don't have so much background, like I haven't studied composition. I don't have any rules. I haven't learned any rules in a way. I just always loved scores and study scores and play music. So yeah,
it's so great to hear those. I mean, when I talk to people like you in this podcast, particularly to hear how individual the ways and the paths are, and that composition can be so much freedom comparing to playing an instrument. And because I often thought, people sometimes ask me too if I would compose and so forth, I cannot imagine it at all, because what I enjoy as an interpreter is to dig into different pieces and different styles. It's like putting a new dress on each time, and I really enjoy that. Mm-hmm. And I think the hardest decision for me would be, I might have ideas to choose, to say, okay, this is the one I'm choosing now, and I'm like, I think I cannot do this. And this is maybe the opposite to freedom, I don't know.
Yeah, because you have to take a lot of decisions, but I feel you can really play around while composers. It's because you have different medium. You have like the orchestra, and you can make music theater. You can go crazy with some, I don't know, visuals or yeah, have fun. For me, it's not always fun, but some I try to get in contact with some. I don't know, some fun or some, yeah, I don't know
Thrilled
what
to
it is.
hear it, that it's so free and wide and exciting. And so since you are a musician yourself, a clarinet player, do you have the feeling that you can relate more to the performers, how they feel or what might challenge them or how to pick them up? Because I find this is also a skill good or some composers have when you're in rehearsal. How do you ask for what you want? And I mean, you can do it in a very nice, encouraging way, but it can also be a little. I think Carola, since I worked with her too, I think she also does it in a very nice way. It always helped me to bring out really what she wants, but I think this is really a skill.
Yeah, I think a lot about the musicians when I make music, and it's very important for me that they feel comfortable playing it. Okay, you have to push maybe somebody a little bit, but also I think it's especially interesting and with the orchestra, because I know how it is to sit in the orchestra, and you should have like deep respect for the orchestra musicians, because it's really a special, really special and amazing job, but it's a really hard job. And I know that everybody wants to do their best. And in an orchestra, you never want to stick out or get point at and do this better or do this differently. So yeah, the way to make people feel comfortable playing contemporary music in orchestra, I think that's very important to find a way that they feel it's something that they want to do. And
I mean, that's also a very important point you're touching on because when I mean you have worked in an orchestra and I know you also have written already for orchestra before, but this is also a very new experience for some composers and how you talk to the orchestra or to the player in the orchestra or to the conductor that they actually do what you want and maybe oftentimes there are not that many rehearsals so you maybe have to focus on what is most important and since you know both sides what I mean I have also lots of composers who are listening here or also young composers who are still studying somewhere and what would be an advice you would give to how to communicate with an orchestra?
I think it's very important that you know what you're doing, and that you know all that. If you put in contemporary music techniques or some new stuff, you really have to know how it is played, and it's possible to be played. And I often meet many players, orchestra players, and also really classical players, and try out everything. And I find very good notation, I hope. Try my very, very best, and to find very good intuitive notation for experimental things, so it looks very tempting to play, because I know I really love the craft of a score, or yeah, how to write music. And it's very interesting to find a way that the score looks tempting. Like, I love playing nice scores myself. And yeah, so I think to be very clear and really know what you want it to sound like, because you are there, you cannot be unsure in front of an orchestra, then they will eat you. You really have to know everything you do very clear, and all the techniques, you know, the how it is produced, you have to try out yourself. I try to play most of the instrument myself, and all the percussion techniques I could play myself, and just so I know with my body how to do it, or yeah, try out, so I know what is difficult, how to have the fingers or the string instrument, or yeah. So I really go
Amazing
deep.
that you try out all the other instruments as well. You're a
I have so many instruments at my studio. Many of my students like to go to my studio because then they can try out on all kinds of instruments. I've been
Wow.
like collecting.
And since we're already talking about orchestra pieces, let's talk about Wolpertinger, the premiere, which will be on the 29th of May in Cologne
Yes.
with the WDR Symphony Orchestra. And I just looked up because I had no clue what Wolpertinger is, I have to admit. And it's a rabbit that has special features. It's a kind of a fantasy rabbit or hybrid rabbit.
You don't
And
have to be a
so
rabbit, actually. It can be what, like, it's an animal, just a
oh, it just can
small.
be an animal because when I looked it up, the internet showed me at first the rabbit with wings and horns. Okay, so it can be anything. So what is Wolpertinger in your piece?
I felt like this Wolpertinger gave me a lot of freedom because the other pieces, orchestra pieces I made is, or many of my pieces placed on a special place, or I'm like exploring. For example, the last piece I made for Vedar, this Pelagic Dreamscape, it was placed in the Røst, this island in the north of Norway, and all this. I stayed there, I listened to all the sound environment, and it's really specific place that you are, that the audience are going to. But with this Wolpertinger, I wanted to be a bit crazy and just mix different animal sounds to create a new animal with the orchestra in a way that that are really a hybrid animal. And it was strange because I was in München working with the orchestra there, and then I got this question from Marie Chacot if I wanted to make this piece. And then I went in the city and I went past a cafe and I saw this crazy stuffed animal in a window. And I was like, oh my God, what is this crazy thing? And I went inside there and I said, I'm sorry, but what is this? And the lady said, oh, it's a Wolpertinger. And I was like, okay, that's the name of the orchestra piece. So that was the same day. So it just, sometimes it happens really quickly. And then it was the name. And I started to read about it. And it was actually like 200 years ago or more. It was in the Bavarian forest. It was some taxidermists that made these special creatures that is like put together of like, it's, as you said, rabbits and and the birds, and they have wings, they can have antlers, they can have like many different parts of animals put together. And they said, oh, I met this creature in the forest, it actually exists, and people start to believe this. And but it looks crazy. I went to this hunt and fishing museum in München last year, and they have the biggest collection of this. And I actually bought two of them myself. I
That's
have
what
it.
I thought. You should have bought them, or maybe the orchestra will give you one more.
I have two different ones in my living room. It looks kind of crazy, and I feel they're kind of alive. I have to say hello to them when I'm getting home because they look really like they are going to like jump.
That's so cool. So
But
I
this.
guess you had fun writing this piece. Is there anything else you would like to tell us about this piece, other than everybody should go there and listen to it and
Yeah, for me, I wanted. Because it's this hybrid animals is from all over the world. They have this in different cultures. So it's not only the Bavarians that have this, but you find it in America and Asia and all these different animals put together. And so I have animals from all over the world and many strange animals that you don't think have this sound, like koala bear. Do you know how it sounds? They have really special sound. And flying fox and Tasmanian devil and hummingbirds and fish owl,
wow.
many different. But you don't have to know that it is an animal. It's music too. It's
So you also look for sounds that could sound like some animal.
I don't know, it's also filled with like beauty, like some are really melodies, and it's a big mix. So it's like, you know, beauty and grotesque and wild and rhythmic. And I also actually used my, I have an old Casio keyboard, and I used some rhythm boxes in this Casio keyboard, put it together, and I thought it would be fun if the orchestra, it sounded like a Casio keyboard at one point. So yeah, I think I gave myself a lot of freedom in this piece, since yeah, I could put all these different things together. Yeah,
sounds really amazing. And yeah, you're in Sweden, and I'm also often curious how and you know, with the scene in Germany, you're being performed here, you got the Siemens Prize, and you studied in Linz. What is different in Norway, or what can you say about the contemporary music scene there, or compared to Germany, Austria?
I think what's special here in Norway is that we the different scenes are working a lot together. Like, it's the jazz scene, experimental jazz, it's a huge thing in Norway, and folk music, and yeah, of course, classical and pop, experimental pop. We are having concerts together, we play on each other's records, and we make pieces together. We have small clubs with the concerts, and yeah, it's not like in Berlin. I felt it's maybe like you have this small place for only this style, and then it's here with only this style. But especially in Oslo, where I live, it's a really big mix, and I feel people are listening to each other's music, so you get very inspired by each other. So I think that's very, it's super nice. It's so many good musicians in Oslo now. It's very vibrant, yeah, music life. It's every day, it's something I want to go and listen to. It's really amazing.
That is really amazing that you can put all those styles together. I've seen that in other countries too, like also in Great Britain or so. And I think we Germans are still kind of ordered. And there's, as you said, there's this place. And yeah, let's see if it can change too.
Yeah, but it's also nice. Everything, it's also good.
And I assume you're still playing the clarinet. You're also teaching, you told me. How do you get everything done, or how do you keep the balance with composing? Or do you have like time structures, or are there more different phases where it's more playing or more composing?
Actually, I'm not playing that much anymore. So it's really rare that I play concerts now. It's a little bit. Now I only have one ensemble. It's Ensemble Neon that I play together with, but it's really rare. It takes so much time to get into this shape that I want to, the standard I want to have. So it's hard with playing, but I actually play a lot when I compose. Then I need my musicality, and I also sing a lot when I compose and play all kinds of instruments. So it's really intuitive when I record, and yeah, I try not to think so much. In a way, in some periods of the composing. Yeah, I need to stay in touch with my intuitive musicality by playing.
And,
but how so to manage my time.
So you play while you compose?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, cool. Mm-hmm. And I record, and I play and more, and I record more. And yeah, often I make the whole piece by playing instruments and sing, and I have it in my Pro Tools, so I have the sketch, sound sketch, before I start to write it down.
That's cool. It's probably, I mean, I can assume that it's also then, as you said, tempting for the performer to play, because I also have experience when composers can sing what they have written. In my case, I'm a singer, and I mean, it doesn't have to be the whatever the most beautiful sound, but they can do it, and then it's also music that I can approach in a way easier, because sometimes I have the feeling it's just, you know, invented in the head.
Yeah,
and that often has a different quality when they also present it to me. And I found that very fascinating.
Mm.
And so your main focus is nowadays on composing then?
Yeah, it's very demanding. So I work 7 days a week all the time. With composing, it's also to compose it It's much more than only to create. It's so much to organize and all the project, and it's really a lot of things to do. That it's more than just create. Yeah.
Do you have certain times in the day, or does it
Yeah,
change?
For me, it's so important to have the mornings for create, and not because then for me, I'm really fresh in my head when I wake up, and to have before 1 o'clock to have this as holy and not have any appointments. Or I try to not read email. I try to put my phone off and just have to, so I can be very focused on composing and not be disturbed. Because when you start to read emails or news, or it's really hard to get into this deep concentration. So
yeah,
to get
I
like
feel you.
5 hours or something, yeah, then I'm really lucky. But if I get 2 hours, or I don't know, without any disturbance, then it's amazing. Or yeah, but when I start to write down things, it's more technical, then I can get more disturbed. Then I don't need this totally super focus, because it's more technical than yeah, but to create, you really need headspace and peace and quiet. For me,
you really know yourself, that you what it needs to get things done, and so you also have like a overall plan that you know. I mean, you probably know how much time you need for an orchestra piece, and every composer is different. I also know that Carola told me once that she's kind of a slow composer, and so everyone is different.
Yeah, everyone is different, but I think I have my discipline from practicing clarinet, because you cannot sit there and wait for inspiration to practice. As a player, you just go there and you practice. You just start. And I think that's very different from people that are composers from the start. I don't know, that I never played instrument on a high level. They can just sit there and wait for inspiration or something for a long time, but I just start and just boof. So I think I work a lot. I can work very fast, because I get into this flow as the way you would have practiced an instrument in a way.
And is there anything you do to kind of balance out the sitting down and composing? Do you enjoy the nature you have in Norway?
Yeah, I walk a lot. I think to walk is very important for me when I compose, because when I make music and then I have to walk, and then I don't listen to any music or any, I don't listen to podcasts. I just have to think about the music. Yeah, sing in my head, like the music I'm creating. And sometimes I sing into my phone. People think I'm talking in the phone, and I just go around singing or talking about the next part of the piece, or like,
oh, that's cool. You already recorded it and you can write it up once you're at home or so. Great. And who or what has played the greatest role in shaping you, and what inspires you?
I think to grow up in a place that nothing happens, in a way. Very small place have shaped me a lot, because I have to do everything myself. And this with listening to the radio, play clarinet with myself, recording myself on cassette player, playing duets with myself, you know. And also to be a lot in the nature with my parents, and they showed me really to look at these small details in nature. Yeah, this have shaped me a lot. And also that they started this music school in Tvedestrand, the nearest small town, when I was 9 or something. And then a clarinet teacher moved here, Astrid Holum. She is amazing. So I started, if she didn't move here, I don't know if I would have become a clarinet player, but she was amazing. So, yeah.
That's so nice, yeah. How it all falls into place.
And also Carola Baukot plays a big role in my life, that she believed in me, like she saw me and believed that I could do this. And yeah, I really trusted her judgment that I could do this.
And that is also so important to meet people like that, because oftentimes we don't see whatever the beauty or the talent in ourselves, but if someone else sees it and kind of holds it for us, then we can go, that's amazing. It's a great gift. Yeah.
Also, my husband, he's also a composer, and he's always supporting me a lot. And we talk together about what we are doing, and we travel together and do this together in a way. So it's nice to not be alone, I think.
Wonderful.
I don't like that.
Wonderful, wonderful,
So
wonderful.
That's really nice.
And I mean, you also already mentioned that you're singing a lot. How would you say is your approach for composing for voice? Because I also know, I mean, I obviously love composers who write for voice because I can sing it, but I also know that some composers are struggling with it, or they even want to avoid it. So how do you approach it? Or do you have an advice for people who are still kind of struggling?
For me, I must say that I feel that I'm mainly an instrumental composer, and it took me quite a long time to start to write for voice, because for me text is really hard, because I don't know. For me, music is not about the text. I remember Jenny Wall, she's one of my best friends. She's like fantastic pop, experimental pop artist, and she writes amazing texts, but I told her that I never listen to the text when I listen to music, and she got so disappointed that I didn't. Oh yeah, but for me, I like to tell a story with sound, like to not have any text. I don't know, for me it's a bit limited with text, but I made two pieces with voice now, and I have some orchestra pieces with humming and la la la, you know. But I love the voice. It's really, because it's inside the human. It's so special, and everybody have different voices. So yeah, it have to be special for the one you are creating the piece for. So yeah, I've been lucky to working with two amazing singers, Juliette Fraser and Silje Aker Johnsen. I made a solo piece for. So yeah, let's see. I don't know. You never know what's happening.
Yeah, that's I mean, they're great sounds we can do, but it's also interesting. Maybe for some people, that's a good advice. If also maybe the text is blocking you, just compose without text.
It's
and
really
I mean, Carola
maybe
also didn't compose so much text. The pieces I have done, they are also, I mean, she's also very a sound oriented person, and what she looks for in the voice is also quite different than other composers do, and it's great, great stuff.
But it's really because my husband, he writes music theater and opera, and he also writes his own text, that it's amazing. And yeah, for him this is the natural way of telling stories, like it's about storytelling. But for me, it's easy to tell stories without the text, because for me it's limiting, but for him it's really liberating. You know, so it's super interesting.
It is very interesting. Wow. Yeah. And what does it mean for you to be true to yourself or authentic in this music business, and how do you keep true to yourself?
I think this is very important, and I don't think about being true to myself. I don't feel I have to. This is a problem. In a way, for me it was a problem with the clarinet player. I felt I was not true to myself at all, and I played a lot of music that I didn't feel it was. It's like going out and take on some clothes. You feel really like strange walking around in these clothes, you know. And I found myself when I started to compose, and that's when I started to be true to myself and what I wanted to do. So yeah, but to be true with yourself, I think it's so important to acknowledge yourself and think what you are doing is, and what you are carrying with you is special, and also give it, and think it is something you should give away. It's not only for you, it's something to give to more people. I think you should do what you love and find, find what you love and do that. It's actually a phrase from a music theater piece that I made about Yngwie Malmsteen. Yeah, he's trying to find his way into life, and I will listen to a lot of interviews with Yngwie Malmsteen. He's not like the nicest person, maybe he's, but and I cut together, and in the end he said like, do what you love and you find what you love and you do that. You cannot sit around and worry what other people may think. So you have to express what you want to express. You only live once. Yeah, so I think this is from me actually, that you cannot worry so much. You just have to do what you think is right for you. And also listen, and you should support others and listen to as much music as possible, because it's how you learn, is to be a part of a community, support others, and be interested in others. I think that's the most interesting is others. For me, myself is not inter I feel I'm very boring, but I think other people are super interesting, and yeah, to be open and curious about others' music and other people, it's making life rich. Yeah.
Great, great, great. And that's also interesting with your story that the clarinet or playing clarinet felt so different. And then there was this freeing process through something that matched you even more, or even the clarinet led you to this. I mean, everything is good for something, and or you're not more very understanding with other musicians and the orchestra. So great stuff. And you said it focuses you, all those gifts. And yeah, there's so much truth in what you just said. What does success mean for you?
Oh, success is to, yeah, feel good about yourself, or I don't know, to have friends is to have success, to be a part of community. And I don't know actually what success is, because to have a good life, I feel very, very privileged, or to be able to compose or to express myself. And maybe that's success, to be able to do it. And I think success is to never give up, because it's so many times that I could have given up and just continue. So success is to never give up, I think. Just move on and try to enjoy what you're doing, and also see people around you, and to be with friends and family, and
And
listen
is there
to
anything else? I like listening to you, and you're
other.
not boring at all. At least not for me. What is there anything that drives you forward, or do you have a kind of a vision?
Maybe it's just to never give up, and I feel I have so many pieces inside of me. I don't know if this is normal, but I feel I have things that wants to come out. And now I just finished this Wolpertinge some days ago, and now I just want to start a new orchestra piece. I don't know, maybe it sounds crazy. I told this to my husband, he was like, oh, that's great.
I think so too. I mean, if the ideas are bubbling up.
Yeah, I feel it's bubbling. I'm looking forward to the next pieces, and I'm looking forward to work with musicians. I think that drive me forward is this meeting points with them, to meet people through music, because that's a very special meeting. Also, when you play together, it's really special how you get to know people when you play, like with the friends I have from when I play chamber music and stuff. It's a very special friendship, because you're there together playing without words, and it's amazing. And I also love these meetings with musicians all over the world, and composers, and yeah, audience, and yeah, music lovers. I think it's so important with music, because it keeps us being human, and I feel it's important to make music and play and spread it as much as possible. Like, yeah, good stuff, positivity and curiosity.
Yeah, wonderful. And we actually arrived at the last question, and you already said so many great things, but maybe you can add something else. Which tip would you like to give young artists?
I think it must be what I already say to never give up and just continue, because I think that's the main thing for everybody that's create art, and yeah, is to just don't give up and be curious about the people around you and support others and be a part of a community and be curious about other people, other music. Listen as much as possible to music and learn. And yeah, because it's also important to learn the craft so you are able to do, to express yourself. So you are able to do that. And yeah, never give up.
Well, I thank you so much for this great conversation today, and I wish you a wonderful performance in May with the VDR Symphony Orchestra and this wonderful animal, Wolpertinger. And I hope I see you one day.
Yes.
In person.
Yeah, I hope we meet. That would be great.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you. And please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.